From failure to power, from collaboration to money, from participation to equity,
we want to poke and provoke conversations about the key themes we need to address as urban resilience practitioners, researchers, and policymakers.
Welcome to Urban Resilience Dialogues. I'm Karina.
And I am Chiara.
And in this episode of Urban Resilience Dialogues, we're talking about learning. And this is a subject very close to both our hearts, as we consider ourselves and probably many members of our community of practice would also identify themselves as lifelong learners. We love learning as individuals. We love learning together in our community of practice. We love learning in our organizations, but we also know how hard it is to make space for deep critical reflection and to make space for learning when the day-to-day context of much of the work in adaptation and resilience is so challenging. But this is important work, and a lot of the literature on urban resilience highlights how building capacities for resilience require a dynamic relationship between learning, anticipating, and reacting in this context of, you know, the complex present vulnerabilities, but also the highly uncertain future risks.
And to explore this all with us, we're joined by Juan Carlos Uribe. Juan Carlos, you studied landscape architecture and environmental sciences in Japan, first introduced to the topic of disaster risk reduction and resilience. And you went on to do a master in international cooperation with a focus on urban development and sustainable emergency architecture. And currently you're working as a learning officer at the United Cities and Local Government, UCLG. As it is also known, UCLG is one of the largest networks of cities, local and regional governments and their association, with a rich experience promoting decentralized cooperation, city-to-city learning, and developing learning resources for the localization of global agendas, such as the SDGs and the Center Framework for Disaster Risk Reduction. So, welcome, first of all. We are very happy to have you today with us to discuss this topic of learning. To start with, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your journey and how you ended up exploring this topic of learning in the context of urban resilience?
Thank you very much, Chiara and Karina. I'm very happy to be here with you. And yes, I think to kind of arrive to where I got involved in learning around urban resilience, it kind of comes from two aspects. As you mentioned, I was studying landscape architecture in Japan, and I was living there during the Great East Earthquake and Tsunami and nuclear disaster. So like through my studies, I already had kind of look into the experience of Japan on disaster risk reduction after Kobe earthquake, all of the movement of volunteers, groups helping through the recovery. But then I was able to experience it firsthand also after the earthquake and tsunami, involved in an organization that was sending people to support the kind of response and recovery in Ishinomaki and other areas in East Japan. And so I think after that, I went on to work with this organization that apart from doing volunteer like disaster relief activities, it kind of was already from many years ago doing global citizenship education and doing cultural exchanges, bringing people from all ages, youth to, you know, retired persons in educational voyages around the world to kind of learn what was going on beyond outside of Japan, anything from environmental issues, sustainability, resilience, climate. And so from, I think like my introduction to kind of learning and education came from that aspect. But as you mentioned afterwards, I kind of wanted to go back to the more built environment, urban planning field that I studied for. So I did the master in international cooperation and urban development. And that's how I ended up working with United Cities and Local Governments, first as an intern and now as a learning officer there. And I guess also because of my experience in Japan, having worked already in the Making Cities Resilient campaign with UNDRR, one of my first tasks as an intern there and then as a staff was supporting the development of the resilience learning modules that UCLG developed together with United Nations Disaster Risk Reduction Office and UN Habitat's Urban Resilience Program. So yeah, I think that's kind of how I ended up there. And it's very interesting because even when it's a very different field, what I was doing in Pittsburgh back in Japan with youth and like outside of the more practitioner world or academic world, I think a lot of this like skills or like experience that I gained there facilitating more like meaningful learning and exchanges is something that I still kind of see myself bringing every time that I work with cities, with local governments, public officers, and other stakeholders.
And that's also what we would like to hear and the experience we would like you to share with us today. So thanks again for being with us. And to kick off our conversation about learning, we went back to its definitions. On the one hand, the meaning of learning is often seen as the process of acquiring knowledge, skills, or capabilities. Learning theorists talk about how learning comprises of both cognitive enhancement as well as moral development, so making judgments about what is right and wrong. And I wonder, what do you make of this? What is your take on what learning means in the context of your work?
Yeah, I think, like, as you mentioned, like there are many different aspects of learning. And I would say that as like from my work, I see on one side learning as being, you know, very much something that as we grow up, as we develop, we kind of do every day and it's very connected to kind of our emotional understanding of the world and how we make sense of different experiences, different connections. And so I think like in that sense, like what I was doing with global citizenship education was very much about that, you know, not so much bringing kind of theoretical understanding of, you know, sustainability issues or like conflict, but making people actually connect with other people in other parts of the world. And through that, caring about other things. And I think there is one aspect of learning that is very much connected to emotions. And then there's the other one that, as you were mentioning, is more about acquiring knowledge, but more importantly about how that knowledge is analyzed, is kind of put into practice and help us make sense of experiences that we're going through. And I guess that's kind of what we do a lot with more in my current work in UCLG, when we try to learn from cities' experiences, connect them to other practitioners, and making them kind of see from that different, like this rich diversity of approaches to resilience, what can be done differently, what challenges they can confront later, and not so much like in a very descriptive or this is what you need to do, but giving that kind of field of possibilities of how we as humans kind of learn and evolve and kind of face different circumstances by learning from people around us and their experiences.
Thank you for that. I think that was a really valuable reflection and something that we see more and more in this climate space, that there is an emphasis on learning and an emphasis on how do we build individual capabilities, but also organizational capabilities for learning. And for example, the latest IPCC Working Group 2 report talks about how given power relationships, cultural needs, community aspirations, usually a top-down approach to information sharing is a lot less effective than building community partnerships and co-creating knowledge so that we can surface visions, surface strategies, and really negotiate to kind of navigate this, you know, the challenges that we deal with around unequal and unsustainable development. And I'm wondering, from your experience, how can this type of transformative learning be enabled? Do you have any examples or stories where you've seen this working well?
I wanted to mention something here, like, because on the aspect of unlearning also, because I think sometimes when we are in the academic world, it's all about, you know, gaining knowledge, gaining theories. And we had a a guest educator in one of our voyages when I was working with PISPO that kind of really introduced us to this concept of unlearning and how many times it is more important to unlearn preconceived, you know, prejudices or ideas of that what we know is the best thing, that what we know is the right approach in any context, without actually looking at how we are seeing things from different glasses, and we are avoiding to look at things on, for example, like many of the things that he was saying were on what we see as resources and what we see as things that can be thrown away. And depending on the concept that you grew up, you know, that's very much determined. And you don't see other things that could be resources as potentially helpful when defining different solutions or when helping on different problem solving. So I think it's also important to understand that a lot of knowledge can also have a kind of affect the way that we see things, and having that approach when we do resilience building, when we try to confront a problem and analyze it, it's also important.
I think that's really fascinating. And I'm curious, what do you think it would really take for this type of learning to scale? How do we unlearn at scale? It's a tough one.
Yeah. It is a tough one, but I think I see a difference already on the way that things are done. And I see that, you know, there is obviously an aspect of trust, of building that trust with different stakeholders, with people who are working, because it's obviously easier to come with the right solution, to come as the expert and say something. But when there is the kind of this understanding of the importance of the local context and the fact that sometimes you need to try things, see how they evolve in a different context, adapt, and having, you know, it is something, it's being vulnerable for us as experts, that we don't always have the solution. It's about being more open to kind of those collaborations with different stakeholders, with local people, with different communities. So I think a lot of it is about building the trust and having that time and that space for not always having to come up with a solution.
Thanks. And to come back to the IPCC working group 2 report that Karina was mentioning and that we were talking about, the report also talks about how social learning can be enhanced when different stakeholders have opportunities to understand a variety of viewpoints, values, resources, that's what we're talking about, and ideas. And when these viewpoints are clearly identified in decision-making, however, the report brings evidence that shows that much social learning still happens only after a crisis, for example, in urban weather adaptation, and that new knowledge is often frustrated by the locking of power local institutions and groups. And I love us to explore this tension a bit more, because we could also add to this that sometimes we generally don't have the knowledge to properly work on strengthening resilience in a given specific context as professional and planners. Therefore, we are compelled for the best to engage with different stakeholders, in particular with local communities, to properly understand the socio-ecological environment we are working with and then plan accordingly. It is what participatory resilience planning precisely seeks to achieve: deploy local knowledge to collectively find the adapted path to progressively build urban resilience and reduce risk. And I would like us to discuss a bit more about participatory resilience planning, because it's often brought up as the answer in terms of methodology for resilience planning, but maybe bringing an unpopular opinion here, not everything can be planned based on local knowledge and co-creation. And I wanted to share a precise example that went through a few years ago, because I've been working on developing some resilience plan for a city. It was in Madagascar at the time. and the local community was 100% convinced that investing in a dredger would fix all their problem of coastal erosion. That was a specific problem they had. But the reality was much more complex, and we had, like, developing the plan, we worked also with some experts, and we understood, like, working with them, that it could worsen the problem and fix it. So the story and my question is, what is our role as professionals on the one hand to support the need for better interactions and appreciation of local knowledge to plan for resilience and foster social learning? And on the other hand, how do we build capacity on spotting what is the knowledge gap we need to bridge at the local level to take appropriate decision?
Yeah, thank you very much, Kara. And yeah, I think, like, here you're kind of touching on one side on an important aspect that is kind of how to bridge that gap. And I think it also comes again, like, in this example, kind of the idea of unlearning, I think, also comes into play, but this time from local communities. That sometimes through educational systems, we have kind of being raised to not see things, and like in this case, for example, see one technology as the solution for something, and even on, like, overlooking other things and processes and more local approaches that had been taken before, but that are not kind of taught in regular curriculums or education. So yeah, like, I think, like, that understanding that process, where does this desire of using a dredger and how, and that fixation with that as the solution, is something that we need to understand, and often as experts, like, we don't have the kind of the skill set, or, like, we don't come with the mindset of understanding those issues, and much less to how can we work with the community to change that without kind of imposing and having, like, different methodologies. There is obviously a tension between that understanding from, also from an outside perspective. You can see things from in a wider, more holistic view, looking at how, you know, it's impacted by other systems, other factors, that maybe one stakeholder is not looking, but opening the possibility for them to understand is also very important, so that, you know, even when the solution that you are as an expert think that is the best one, if it's just done without the actual understanding and, like, actually buy-in from local communities, it's not going to be well maintained. Being able to get the, I don't like the word buy-in, but I cannot come with a different word of, like, you know, the understanding and, like, getting people to actually be convinced about that solution is as important as bringing that up to the table.
Yeah, thank you for that. I think there's lots of reflections from that example and from your answer. And I think there's something about bringing everyone with you in a process. And I think sometimes when done really well, learning can really help. But when it's not done properly, then you end up with all sorts of, you know, counter effects, you know, when people feel left out, when people feel unheard, when people then resist your solution or the implementation of that. But I think, and there's maybe two parts to this question. One of our next questions is digging a bit deeper into the role of learning and implementation. So perhaps a different aspect to what we were just talking about, but we wanted to discuss a bit about this challenge around the fact that we do have some knowledge, and yet there are such big challenges when we seek to implement what we know might work or can work. And a lot of the literature talks about how implementation is often hindered by a lack of skills and capacity across very different scales. So individual, community, institutional scales. So there's lots of examples. And this is where, you know, I feel like I have a lot of examples of this, where professionals lack experience of working in transdisciplinary work environments, where you might need to collaborate across academia, across practice, across policymaking. And we're all in our corners fighting for our ways of knowing and then feeling like the others just don't understand us. And we also see it in terms of individual or perhaps community resilience in cases where in crisis, individual resilience, for example, the ability to leave after a shock, can actually come at the cost of wider community resilience. So, you know, and then if we look at the institutional level, there is so much talk about lack of capacity for implementation, whether we talk about technical, which is what you were mentioning, or whether we talk about, you know, almost like the softer skills as well, the negotiation, the conflict management, the, you know, the kinds of skills to actually build consensus. So we have a lot of challenges here. And we were curious, how do you see these issues from the perspective of someone to tackle them through learning? So perhaps the first slice of the question, how can individual learning help us tackle these challenges?
I feel like working with different cities and look at different public officers so much, it's not often the lack of technical knowledge of how to do things or you know, the right approach to the things. But a lot of times it's like, as you mentioned, like bringing different departments together to do one thing, getting the political commitment to like implement a specific project on resilience building, or kind of taking maybe the not so profitable in the short term, but like more kind of long-term approach to do different things. And I think there is where kind of this, like going to the individual aspect, like getting the inspiration from different cities and kind of looking at how like I think particularly in public administrations, as you mentioned, there's a lot of competition of what department or like what corner, what discipline has the bigger say or the biggest influence. Because as a association of cities, we do often end up working with governance and policymaking, and but with technical stuff. And we see that, you know, there's a like rich knowledge there, but always like a big challenge is that of, you know, how do we approach our council, how do we approach our mayor if it's a small city, how do we bridge gaps between different stakeholders? But I think like a lot of like as you mentioned, that's like a place where a lot of capacity is still needed.
Thank you for that. And I think you're already answering part of my next question around, you know, zooming out from this level of individual learning, what do you see is really needed at the other scale? So at the scale of a team, an organization, or a city as a whole, what do you see as the institutional capacities maybe that we need to support?
Because when we do a lot of the peer learnings, we also see that empathy, which is probably more often on an individual level, kind of building that empathy towards others and like kind of looking at things, not necessarily from technical point of view, but from the end user or in our case, like the citizens or like residents' point of view, is something that might often help build that consensus around things. And that is not like just like an abstract policy debate, but helping people share knowledge through, for example, I think like it's like storytelling and through how this a policy will affect someone in their community, or like, you know, a migrant when we were doing peer exchanges about migration and how that relates to different persons, was something that we saw was able to bridge some of those gaps or like disciplinary different disciplines, for example. So I think like having I think it kind of connects both of the questions that you were doing, kind of connected to that individual aspect of empathy might help bridge those institutional gaps around decision making and kind of building a vision, whether it's on migration issues or resilience, risk reduction, or climate.
As in the field of peer learning, we can think of all the form of cities network that exists, right? City to city exchange events and this kind of experience. And I would like to hear, based on your knowledge, what are the opportunities that this type of networks bring in practice? And do you have any example that you could share with us where you witnessed like meaningful peer-to-peer learning at the city scale, right?
We struggle as city networks of sharing what didn't work and what worked. And like sharing what doesn't work is always really hard in city networks that are always looking for good practices. And even when a good practice is shared, all of the obstacles that we're confronted to make that happen are not often kind of documented or talked about enough. But I think like there is a very unique like opportunity of bringing cities together, of inspiring different changes, inspiring different approaches to problems that are more and more similar in different cities. When we talk about climate change, resilience, of course, with like the concrete context, but some many times shared across territories and beyond the municipal or country borders. In terms of examples, like one that we often kind of come back was something that happened probably early 2000s between Brazilian cities and cities in Mozambique on the kind of building in the cadastre and like this whole approach to urban planning. And it was kind of a big project that one of the kind of first peer learning activities that UCLG was involved in, kind of sharing those experiences from Brazil with cities in Mozambique. And with that we see now has facilitated different approaches to more like risk aware, like risk sensible urban planning in Mozambican cities that now already have kind of the technical experience of building cadastre. They have the information necessary for urban planning and all these things. A few months after a peer learning, but more at the individual level, when you see people exchanging through WhatsApp groups, one challenge that they have and seeking for different approaches that they had or different solutions, and I think like that kind of social learning is an important part that is fostered through the city networks.
And I think this theme of learning from failure, I swear it comes up in all the episodes. You know, I think it's like a cross-cutting theme of what we're struggling with, learning from failure. And in our notes here, I had a note to myself which said, to do a question here about the really challenging stuff. And I think in reality, I really struggled to actually name all these, the challenging stuff, because there's almost too many. But a couple of things that I really wanted to pick on was, were some themes around challenges around how do we fund learning? How do we value learning? So even when we talk about cities sharing practices and sharing knowledge and exchanging, a lot of the times in my experience, it's down to those individuals who are really motivated and who are quite extrovert and who like meeting people. And that is not, it's not part of even their targets or what they're, what they're supposed to do in their job description. You know, they do it because they see they get value personally out of it. But we don't necessarily value this at the institutional level. And there's lots of challenges around that. And then when I come to think about projects and when I come to think about how projects are funded and the requirements around what is often called monitoring, evaluation, and learning, but a lot of the times in practice is just monitoring, I think there's such huge challenges of how do we move away from the, very quantitative ways of understanding impact and quantifying that to actually the nuances and the, the realities, coming back to that point around learning from failure. So, you know, I'll stop here with the negative examples and with the really challenging stuff. But I guess what I'm trying to get at is maybe a question to you around where do we go from here? Like, how do we actually expand this, you know, this openness to learn from failure? How do we change the ways projects are funded and the donor requirements, and work with the funder landscape to transform monitoring, evaluation, and learning to really put learning at the heart? And how do we really fund and value learning? And I say fund and value because I don't think it's just a matter of a lack of funding. I think a lot of the times there's a lack of perceived value as well. So over to you for, you know, answering all of these really easy questions.
No, but like it's really important that you pointed out, and I think, you know, it's actually something that we are this year working on at UCLG. Like, we came out across with this this kind of network or initiative called Effective Institutions Platform, and they were actually kind of doing. They wanted to pilot some monitoring tools or mechanisms for peer learning. And you know, this is the discussion that we've been having with them. And the interesting thing is, like, this is a platform that brings together, like, I think, like, OECD countries and kind of some of their, like, the donor funding agencies, and then some of networks that are working more at the city level. And you know, they were like, we've kind of been talking about this a lot of, you know, it's really hard to say measure the impact of peer-to-peer learning, because it takes years, and it's not like, yeah, you come out of a peer learning of a week and you're changing the things, how the things are being done in your city. So it's something that kind of needs to be work on, and as you mentioned, like, going beyond the kind of the data gathering that we usually do monitoring and evaluation through. And it will be really interesting to look at how they what they propose, and in which is going to be done this year with some peer learnings that we're doing on urban migration. But I think I'm in a very privileged position working at UCLG, where we have more, like, you know, operational funding, and being a network that was born from cities coming together. Like, whether it was city twinning or city to city exchanges, it is kind of very ingrained in what we do, and it's kind of part of our operational funding. It's kind of goes to things like bringing cities together and facilitating this learning from each other. But I know that in many projects, more the project-based funding, it's really hard to put in learning and to work from the monitoring and evaluation to the learning approach, even like within UCLG. Like, there's a lot of research that is being done on, you know, the SDG implementation, inequalities in cities, but how to bring this data to something that makes sense for the, like, public officers is something that we always kind of struggle with.
Juan Carlos, thank you for all your reflections and thoughts. To wrap up, we've got one last question. If you were to design your dream learning journey or program regarding urban resilience, funding not being an issue, we're suspending all the challenges now, what would it look like? Who would be the learners? Who would be the teachers? What would that experience feel like?
I feel like bringing, you know, people from different ages, and like, is something that I personally kind of enjoyed a lot in my previous work, and it's something that I see that is often lacking, and having, you know, someone in a retired person in their seven, like, and this, like, probably doesn't go all the way to ideal, but like, just kind of what comes to my mind of having someone retired in the 70s, 80s, who has different lived experiences, talking with someone who is working in their 40s, 50s, but also with teenagers and children, and seeing those different perspectives and different approaches, and how they see a challenge, like, whether it's like, this was in Japan. So, for example, when we talked about about whether it was like a tsunami or an earthquake, you know, the different sort of experience of lived experience that those persons have is really broad. But there's also very enlightening things that come up from children's minds or like teenagers that come up with a much more innovative approach, or like a very like a question that was kind of probably never asked before, because that's just the way things were done. So I think if we're talking about resilience in communities, kind of being able to create methodologies that bring those different generations to the table and facilitate really like, you know, meaningful conversations where they can all bring both like kind of their out of nowhere questions and kind of comments about realities and like, you know, the more lived experience would be something that would be really interesting to do and to see what comes from that.
I'll come on that course. I'm up for it. Oh, well, thank you so much for joining us. I feel like there's a lot of really rich themes to digest and to reflect on.
Thanks for listening to Urban Resilience Dialogues. We are Karina Angeloyu and Chiara Tomaselli.
Want to get in touch with us? Drop us a line at urbanresiliencedialogues@gmail.com, or you can tweet us
with the hashtag URDialogues.
Chat to you soon.